Hello, welcome to the Weekly Docket Podcast. Today is February 1st, 2024. My name is Phil Silberman. I'm your host. I'm the owner of the Silberman Law Firm, and I've got my co-host with me, Austin Black, who's a lawyer in our Dallas office. Hello, Austin.
Hi.
Resounding how you're feeling better today.
Yeah, I had COVID last week. I'm feeling a lot better now. Still a little bit getting over that, but a lot better.
That's good to have you with almost full health. What is on our docket today?
We're going to go over our legal news section, and we're specifically going to be talking about a lot of things that some of our precious celebrities are going through right now, or Alec Baldwin, 50 Cent, and a few others. Then we're going to answer some legal questions, including is striking a pose copyrightable?
Okay, so it's safe to say that this is basically our celebrity edition, episode 3, is that correct?
Exactly.
So Alec Baldwin, in 2021, he was shooting a film, and it was a Western, and it was called Rust. I don't know if it ever came out or not because of all the controversy. Terrible tragedy. You know, he's shooting the film, and he's an actor, and I don't know a lot about shooting films, but they give him a gun, and they allegedly say, okay, guns, cold gun, and he's doing his scene, and he shoots somebody. On purpose, he's an actor. And horrifically, the cinematographer dies of a fatal bullet wound. And terrible thing, but the prosecutor in New Mexico charges him with involuntary manslaughter. When that first came out, I was like, terrible accident. I don't know all the facts, but gosh, you're charging him with a pretty serious crime. And Alec Baldwin recently has pled not guilty to involuntary manslaughter. Is this the right charge? Is this a publicity stunt by the prosecutor? Or?
I'm honestly not sure. I would obviously, they're not going to release the footage of that. Rust hasn't been released for one. That movie isn't out yet.
The guy's an actor. You hand him a gun. He's doing his thing. Clearly, he doesn't really intend to shoot anybody. Now, I know that it's involuntary. I don't think this gets there, but let's take a look at our elements of involuntary manslaughter in the state of New Mexico.
So in New Mexico, the standard for involuntary manslaughter is that you have to act in a reckless manner, which may cause the death of another person.
So our listeners have an example. If you're going to go drive a car and you blindfold yourself and you have a six pack and you just start driving the car down the road and you kill someone, that's obviously involuntary manslaughter.
That's the classic example of it. Yep.
Okay. You give him a gun. What is he supposed to do? Every time someone gives you a gun, are you supposed to shoot it in the ground? Or?
I don't know. As you were saying, there's a lot of he said, she said, right, about whether he was told the gun was cold or not. If he was told that the gun was cold, that there was nothing wrong with it. But
well, I'm not an actor, and I don't know, but there is some standard out there. Yeah. You know, somebody needs to ask Clint Eastwood or something, because yeah. Clint Eastwood has done a zillion Westerns, and I want to know if every time Clint Eastwood, like that, and then one of my favorite Westerns is Unforgiven, where Clint Eastwood plays William Money, and in that final scene, he points the gun at the sheriff, and yeah, the sheriff says, I didn't deserve this, because I was building a house, and Clint Eastwood says, deserve it, got nothing to do, and he shoots it. So did Clint Eastwood test that shotgun in the movie 5 times before he shot him on scene and with a pretend gun? In New Mexico, 4th-degree felony punishable by 18 months in prison and a $5,000 fine. I don't think Alec Baldwin is worried about the $5,000, but he certainly doesn't want to get 18 months in prison. And to me, someone who doesn't know all the facts, I think he's getting a raw deal. It's a tragedy for certain. I don't wish harm upon anybody that got shot on set, but I don't think we need to exacerbate the matter by putting people in prison. Let's move on. Who's our next celebrity we're talking about?
To 50 Cent.
Here's what I want to know. Why is it singular Cent and not plural Cents? Why is it not 50 Cents?
I don't know. It's a few cents short of a dollar.
Probably better brand, probably cooler, probably fit the vernacular better. So 50 Cent is on his last tour and he's playing in LA at some arena. And he gets so frustrated that the mic doesn't work. He just chucks the mic off stage and hits somebody in the head.
Yeah.
And the lady he hits in the head, she's bleeding from her forehead. She later goes to the hospital, says she has a concussion and she has these long lasting symptoms. And she sues 50 Cent for negligence in the state of California. So what do you think? 50 Cent negligent or not negligent?
Absolutely negligent. The average microphone weighs about 3.5 pounds. So this is not as light as people would think it is from looking at it on the stage if you haven't held one.
And what are elements of negligence in the state of California?
Yeah, so negligence is a tort. First, there needs to be a duty that exists from one person to another. There needs to be a breach of that duty. The action of the person who breached it needs to directly cause damages of the other person. Those are the elements there.
Okay, let's take them one by one. So did 50 Cent have a duty not to throw a mic off stage and hit someone?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm going to say yes, he did. Yeah.
Our duty to the safety of his set.
Exactly.
Probably, although 50 Cent's argument was she was in a restricted zone where she wasn't supposed to be. So maybe that's the microphone throwing zone. And she was in the line of fire and she stepped into that zone.
I don't buy that. I don't buy it.
Okay. All right. Duty. So 50 Cent has a duty for the safety of his crew. Did he breach that duty by throwing the mic?
Yes, he did breach that duty, in my opinion.
All right. We've got a clear breach of the duty. Causation. It's a 3.5 pound mic. Chucks her in the forehead. Probably the cause of her forehead laceration. Probably the cause of a concussion. What are her damages?
She's asking for lost wages, hospital bills, and then emotional distress and probably other things too.
Hopefully she's okay. We don't know the extent of damages. Concussions can be serious. Let's talk about the difference between intentional, though. The plaintiff also in the article said that, you know, he looked right at her before he threw the mic. And that's no longer, negligence is supposed to be this unintentional thing. I'm just pointing out that the plaintiff's attorney might need to amend his petition with a battery. I don't know, California, but if he intentionally did it, it should be civil battery. Or in the alternative, as it's in, well, his lawyers always plead out of both sides of her mouth, in the alternative, the negligence.
Sure.
I don't think the jury is going to care, you know, how he did it. That's just how juries are. But just to keep
probably
our
element,
who's our next celebrity we're going to talk about?
George Carlin.
How is George Carlin different from our other two celebrities in a very significant way?
Well, let's see. So he's not a rapper. He's not an actor, really. He's a comedian. Oh, and he's dead.
Yes. I knew you were good. That's why I hired him. It's like you just got this brilliant. Yeah. This is the only one that's dead. My favorite piece of work that George Carlin did was Thomas the Tank Engine. And I've had four kids, and everyone needs to know that George Carlin wasn't just a raunchy comedian, but he did great work as the narrator in Thomas the Tank Engine. If you haven't seen it, go watch an episode. It's amazing.
I'll put it on my list.
George Carlin's estate, because we've established that he's dead, sued these podcasters. They decide it's going to be awesomely funny to have AI generate a George Carlin stand-up comedy based on his body of work. So they find all the stand-up episodes loaded into AI. AI puts out this voice and image likeness that sounds like George Carlin, and George Carlin's up there doing stand-up. I listened a little bit. Some of it was pretty funny. He's like, oh, I'm sorry for not going on tour sooner, but I've got a really good excuse. I've been dead since 2008. George Carlin's family get really upset. The estate sues the podcasters for copyright infringement. So we're back into the realm of all these AI cases. Sarah Silverman sued and wrote the book. I think she sued ChatGPT or whichever AI company saying, hey, the AI bot synthesized all my material, took my book, regurgitated, violated my copyright. There's a New York Times case currently pending where the Times is saying AI is taking all of the Times articles and regurgitating that and putting it out there. And the family, the estate of George Carlin says, hey, this is so ghoulish and so far inappropriate that you've taken the body of George Carlin's work, this great comedian, and you've infringed upon it and you've violated the copyright, usually. And the standard is, all right, if I create an original work, I write an article, I do stand-up comedy, I write a book, this is my original protected creative work. And AI comes along and it gets uploaded. And then AI's defense is, I'm not violating copyright. I'm using it as a fair use, and I'm creating my own sort of creative original work. And it just happens that I'm not a human doing it.
Sure.
And as lawyers, by the way, we take other lawyers' works. I might read a scholarly article that's clearly copyrighted by another lawyer. I might read that article, read another article, do some additional research, and then create my own individual work. That's not copyright infringement. That's what AI's defense. On the face of it, it sounds like a really good defense. I think the Supreme Court or the legislature is going to have to step in here, because this is unprecedented. What's going on? We've never had this happen before. They're going to have to step in here and make new law. All right, let's answer some legal questions.
Okay.
First question we ask today is wrongful termination. In Texas, wrongful termination is not a thing.
No.
We have what's called an employment at will state. Now, Austin, you work for me. I love you. But if one day I decide I don't like you anymore, I just don't want you to work for me, I can say, Austin, you're terminated. It's employment at will. Nope.
You do that, and I will submit a potential new client request saying I was wrongfully terminated from the Silverman Law Firm for a free consult.
We may have a conflict on that one. You do have things in Texas and across the country. You have a violation of a statute or an illegal termination.
Sure.
For example, you can't terminate someone because of their race, their religion, their age, disability.
Yeah.
Those things are clearly codified violations that are protected. And that is a type of, I won't call it a wrongful termination, I just call it a violation of statute.
Yeah.
Now, there is an exception where you can, in a sense, be wrongfully terminated, but it's very rare.
Yeah.
If you have an employment contract and it's a term contract for a year or 2 years, promises you some sum of money, and maybe in that contract says you can only be fired for cause, and your employer then terminates you, that is a wrongful termination, but really it's just a breach of contract.
Yeah.
So there is that, but that doesn't happen very often. So we get a lot of calls on wrongful termination, and just want to be clear, not a thing in Texas. Maybe you were fired for violating a statute.
So people will come to us and they have a judgment against them, but they have absolutely nothing. They ask us what they can do. Yeah.
We get a bunch of broke people calling us.
Yes.
And
let's not call them broke. Let's just
financially challenged people.
Okay.
That don't have two nickels to rub together.
Or 50 cents.
Or 50 cents. And they've been sued. Or they've already got a judgment and they're calling us and they're like, what do we do? Good news, the state of Texas was founded by debtors and criminals, so we have some of the most debtor-friendly laws in the entire country. In Texas, here are the major ones that you can have. You can have as big of home, as homestead property, as you possibly can afford. You could have your floors and your counters made out of solid gold and millions of dollars of homestead improvement. And we will never let creditors get to that. You can also have a lot of personal property. You can have $100,000 in personal property if you're a family. You can also have vehicles. For as many drivers in the house with the driver's license, you can have a vehicle. And the vehicles can be nice. It can be a Bentley. You can have super nice vehicles. You can also have retirement accounts. So you can have all this stuff that the creditors are never going to get. And your creditor is just going to be out of luck. So what do we tell those people when they call in? Usually, if the person doesn't have anything and he's never going to have anything, we just tell them, hey, you may not want to do anything. If they've been sued, we will say, maybe let's put up a little bit of a fight. Let's not make it super easy. There's no one day you may hit the lottery or may start a great business or you may get back on your feet. So let's not just give them a judgment. Let's put up a little bit of fight.
Sure.
But sometimes you've got some people that are in their 70s and they don't have anything. And it's just never a situation where they're ever going to accumulate still.
It's throwing good money after bad, and it's just not worth it.
Exactly. Now, there are some limited ways in Texas. One of the few ways that you can collect, primarily the debtor has to have real estate that's not your homestead property, like investment property. That's a good way to, you can sell that, get money for it. Or the debtor has to have some money sitting in a bank account.
Okay.
Things, it's going to be a tough go for a creditor to collect in Texas.
Yes.
Okay. Tell me about this influencer that struck a pose.
Yeah. An influencer was sent a cease and desist letter to delete all of their social media accounts because her poses were allegedly violating copyright that other influencers were doing things with too. Now,
like what kind of poses are we talking about? We're talking about like Zoolander poses, like,
so
like
I actually can tell you.
They're very generic.
Okay.
The poses that this person was doing
were exactly the same as every female influencer does on Instagram. They were all the same sort of poses. There is nothing special about this.
Can you demonstrate one of the poses for me?
I really can't. I would need a much more low-cut shirt to do that.
You're not correctly endowed.
I'm not correctly endowed to do those poses.
So we're not talking about Blue Steel or Magnum.
We're not. We are not. Definitely.
What about the Smolder from Jumanji, Dr. Bravestone Smolder?
Jumanji or from, I would like to argue that originally came from Shrek 2 with Prince Charming, but we can have that discussion later.
Okay. But so is a pose copyrightable? If I've got a really unique smolder, I don't even know how to smolder, but can I do a smolder and get it copyrighted?
No, you cannot. It's not unique enough.
So we think on the weekly docket, our official opinion is a pose in itself is not so original as to rise to the level of copyrighted material. Moving right along, Garnish, 18-year-old daughter out of control.
Yeah.
And the guy calls in and he says, my daughter's so out of control, I want you to get me an adult guardianship for her.
Yeah. She's not calling him back. She's smoking marijuanas, all that. And he's, I need a guardianship.
Guardianship is mostly for old people with dementia that have lost capacity, not for out of control 18-year-olds. But I empathize with this gentleman because I have teenagers, and it would be nice if I could have some type of, they turn 18 and I need to rein them back in.
Sure.
So for better or worse, the guardianship process is not available. All right. Now we're coming up to our legal sound bites, our legal faux pas, our legal confusion vocab terms, or just things we've heard that are funny in our law practice. Here's what I want to know. What does it mean to catch a case?
What it means to catch a case is when you have a client who, unfortunately, is a convicted felon.
For sure. In this situation, we're doing probates. We do a lot of probates at the law firm. And oftentimes, someone is named as executor. It turns out you cannot be a convicted felon. Or for many years, you could not have been a convicted felon. Every time we signed up a probate, and we've got a client that wants to be executor, we always have to ask them, are you a convicted felon? And a lot of times they say, oh, Mr. Silverman, back in 1980 or 90 something, I caught a case. And I was not familiar with that term, but apparently it's, the idea is maybe you're just minding your own business and a case catches you. I don't think that's actually work. I don't think you catch a criminal case like you caught COVID last week.
The same way.
You, even though you caught the case to none of your own fault, the state of Texas will not let you serve as executor because you are a convicted felon. And the legislature thought it was a sad thing because it turns out that we've passed House Bill 3331 to the rescue, which says now, in the court's discretion, convicted felons can, in fact, serve as the executor. So good news, felons. And so in the court's discretion, this could be a good thing. There are maybe that executor who's a convicted felon is also the sole beneficiary. There's no harm that can be done to other people. If I'm the probate judge, sure, Bill, you know, you messed up in 1985. You're the only beneficiary. You want to steal from yourself? All right.
Yeah.
No skin off my back. Done. You're appointed as the executor.
Yeah.
There are some situations where if I'm the probate judge, I probably am not going to give this approval. If you're a five-time convicted felon for embezzlement and forgery and check fraud and all of these financial crimes, and you're not the sole beneficiary, you've got other beneficiaries. One of them is the Red Cross, a charity, and the other ones are for other kids. If I want to get reelected as a probate judge, I'm probably not allowing you to serve as an executive. Going to go into that. All right, let's go ahead and rant and rave a little bit. And we're talking about Congress's power of investigation and oversight. Congress used its subpoena power to bring all the big tech guys over to Capitol Hill and give them their annual verbal lashing about how bad their platforms are and how dangerous and harmful they are to society. And this one was really bad because we were talking about harming kids. And I have kids. I have four kids. I don't let them use social media. I believe it makes them stupid. And it also, they're already teenagers and they're emotionally unstable and volatile. So I don't want them any more emotionally unstable or volatile. So our rule is no social media. So they bring the tech CEOs onto Capitol Hill. They give them the annual verbal lashing. And it was really poignant. Politicians are great at speaking and driving the point home. And Lindsey Graham gets up there and says, you've got blood on your hands. And this other guy, Josh Hawley, he gave read him the Riot Act and demanded an apology.
Yeah.
So, okay, so I'm just going to say, I'm tired of these politicians getting up there and acting holier than thou and giving these CEOs this verbal lashing. And the reason I'm tired of it is because the politicians actually have the power to fix it. You're Congress. You make the law. If you want to fix it, you can.
Yeah.
And I'm tired of, the hypocrisy in it.
Yeah. And they like to, and I agree in most aspects.
Lindsey Graham, he got up there, yeah, the blood on your hands and all that. And he took, I mean, his campaign, he took money from all the big tech. And now, he got at one point at the end of 2023, he got up there and he was like, I've instructed my staff to go back and look at all the money that I've received from these big tech companies and I'm giving it all back. And so you already took the money. You already got elected. Yeah, now you can just conveniently give it back from your pot of money. I thought that was the height of hypocrisy. Now, Josh Hawley, I don't know Josh Hawley. I actually love the policies on reining in big tech.
Sure.
He didn't do anything quite as overt as take the campaign money from what I've heard, but The Guardian did point out that you've invested your retirement. I don't know. It was like tens of thousands of dollars. We're not talking a ton of money here. But he was invested in the Vanguard Growth Fund. Mm. And in full disclosure, I think I've got some investments in the Vanguard Growth Fund.
I am too.
But they were like, you see, and he's a hypocrite and he invested in the Vanguard Growth Fund and that's got the Magnificent Seven in it. The Guardian, if you're a liberal progressive newspaper and that's how you're trying to get the politician, I think that's a little tenuous.
A little bit of a stretch.
But if you're going, you are the Republican senator from Missouri and you're going to make it your platform and your passion to rail against big tech, you probably need to pay a little closer attention to what you're investing in. I'm tired of all the grandstanding. I'm tired of the politicians acting like there's nothing they can do about it. And the law that big tech hides behind is the CDA. Okay. It's section 230 of the CDA, which is the Communications Decency Act. It was passed in 1996. And it was really designed to help the internet grow, but it's pretty much anybody that's got a platform or a website, like a Google search engine or a social media platform, is anything that gets published on there. It's not on you. It's not on Google. It's not on TikTok. It's not on Facebook. That's the on the publisher, the individual creator, like me, like Phil Silverman, like Austin Black, that was our opinion. So all the terrible stuff that's happening to these children or these challenge acts and they're dying or how pedophiles are having access to the kids. Big tech is hiding behind Section 230 of the CDA, and Congress has the power to change it, but they're not doing it, probably because big tech is lining their political pockets and they just want to get up there and grandstand and they don't want to do anything about it. And I'm tired of it. If you want to do something about it, you need to rein in Section 230 of this, of the CDA, of the Communications Decency Act. You've got the power to, just to bring this home for our listeners. The Wall Street Journal, the newspaper, can't have an editorial piece in the paper and disclaim all liability as a publisher. Now, the editorial piece can have opinions about Trump or Biden or whatever, and the Wall Street Journal may have a little footnote that says these opinions are not the opinions of the Wall Street Journal. They're not going to let a guest editorial author come on and espouse some sort of, you know, terrible challenge or murderous threats, because the Wall Street Journal as a newspaper has liability. Why does big tech get complete immunity? And that, what I'm saying is, it has to stop.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We know why they get immunity. Lobbyists. Those are why they get immunity.
Just big tech has a lot more money. And on that note, that brings our show to a close. So please follow us, subscribe to us, wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us reviews for better or worse. We appreciate all the commentary. And thank you to Mr. Black for being my co-host, and this is Phil Silverman signing off for the Silverman Law Firm.